Canto 5. If in a flame of love beyond all seen on earth, I glow to you so that your eyes are conquered in their power, let that not mean you marvel, for you have to realize this comes when perfect vision apprehends the good, and knowing what it is, moves near. I see now how the light that never ends shines in your mind, light which, seen to appear alone and always kindles love. From this come all things that beguile you, even though from just a trace of it, and hit and miss your understanding of it, yet the glow shines through. So saying, Beatrice began the canto, and like one who would not break her speech, she said, God's greatest gift to man in all the bounty he was moved to make throughout creation, the one gift the most close to his goodness, and the one he calls most precious, is free will. Creatures that boast intelligence have this, but none that falls outside that category is endowed with any. Now it will be clear to you, in view of this, the worth of what is vowed. If it be such that God does as you do, that is, consent. For it is in the pact of God and man that the great treasure chest, free will, as I have said, by its own act becomes the sacrifice. What would be best to offer for a vow that's unfulfilled? Nothing. Nothing you give in recompense will serve, for what you will is now ill-willed. Good works with stolen gains would make more sense. By now you are assured of the chief point. But Holy Church can sometimes waive its laws in this regard, which might seem out of joint with what I've said is true. So you must pause for thought, sit at the table for a while. The tough food you have swallowed won't stay down without help. Let your mind, in its best style, be open to my words and win renown for holding on to them, since to have heard without retention can't deserve the name of knowledge. The mere thought would be absurd. Two things in close accord but not the same supply the essence of that sacrifice. One is material, the thing you give or else give up. That's the substantial price. The other's formal, how you vow to live, the pact itself. This last can't be annulled save by observing it, regarding which I spoke just now with never a point dulled. Just as the Hebrews had, without a hitch, to make their offerings, though what those were could change, as you are no doubt well aware, the formal part to which I now refer, I made clear when I told the tale back there about the vow. That part, indeed, may be such that no fault, if matter is exchanged, need be incurred. But still, let no one free his shoulders from a burden once arranged, unless, to back his choice, the silver key of priestly wisdom and the golden one that signifies priestly authority have both been turned to prove it may be done. And every such exchange is reckoned vain, unless the new load outweighs the one shed by 6 to 4 at least, so that a gain of burden, not a loss, is there instead. A vow which tips all balances on earth, for value can't be matched by anything at all, no matter what that thing is worth. Therefore let humans take great care to bring their full attention to a vow, and not be frivolous. Nor should they be perverse like Jephthah, who pledged wildly and forgot that keeping faith might make a bad thing worse. He said that he would offer to be burned, the first thing that emerged from his front door. It was his daughter, and too late he learned that saying, I did ill, would have earned more credit with God. And Agamemnon, too, showed the same folly when to sail for Troy on a fair wind he offered payment down, his daughter Iphigenia. The joy went out of her fair face. To grieve for her is wise for all who've heard about that rite, and simple. How could such a thing occur? Christians, let not your attitude be light to undertakings. Feathers in every wind ought not to be your model, nor will all waters restore clean skin when you have sinned. Remember how, to save you from a fall, you have the testaments, both new and old, to guide you, and the pastor of the church. Give not the Jew that's with you in the fold his opportunity. If you besmirch yourself with wicked greed at his cheap rates, the partner is glad. You must be men, not stupid sheep. For ridicule awaits the lamb that leaves its mother's milk, and then, foolish and wanton, fights itself to suit its brainless pleasure. Just so Beatrice spoke, in these words that I write, and then turned, mute, yet more with longing than I can evoke, to where the universe is brightest. Such a falling wordless, and a change of look, silenced my eager mind, already much preoccupied with pages, a whole book of extra questions. We sped like a shaft that strikes the mark before the cord is still, into the second realm. As if she laughed aloud, I saw my lady's fair face fill with joy when entering the radiance of that next heaven, and the planet turn the brighter for it, and the star enhance its aspect with a smile, though it could burn more brightly only in this circumstance. Imagine then what I became, when by my nature I am so transmutable. As in a fish pool that's a calm, clear sky to all those fish beneath, they form a school around what comes from outside, which they guess to be new food. So now I saw, at least, a thousand splendors make the distance less towards us, gathering around the feast. From them I heard, "How this one will augment our lives!" And as each eager soul came near, it seemed so full of happiness, it sent bright flames out all around. If I stopped here, think, reader, how you'd crave a testament more full. Then you will know how much desire I had to hear from them about their state as soon as I could see them in their fire. "You, born for good, for whom it is the fate, given by grace to gaze on the great chairs of triumph in eternity, although your war continues, each one of us bears the light of charity that spreads its glow through all heaven. Thus, if you're inclined to be enlightened about us, then at your pleasure ask away, just speak your mind." One of those pious spirits said all that. Then Beatrice said this, "Speak, speak. You'll find them trustworthy as gods." I see well how you nest in your own light, which is drawn from your eyes. For when you speak, I can tell it must spring from your smile, an extra dawn adorning daylight. As for what you are, however, I don't know, nor why you rank in this sphere that another's beams debar from mortal sight, for Mercury is blank beside the blazing sun. Thus I inquired of that effulgence which addressed me first, a light that then became, as if inspired, far brighter than before. Like the sunburst that comes when all dense vapors burned away, the sun conceals itself with excess light, just so the holy form put on more day, as if the day it had was merely night, and hid in its own joy. What can I say? Such eloquence can spring from hidden things. But what it said next, my next canto sings.